welcome. Oh, to my right. Oh.
No, sorry. This is Serge Delpierre, and today we're going to be watching Monty Python and the Holy Grail. To my right
is John H. Rubin.
To my left,
Tim McMillan.
I was waiting for someone else to do that. And the original Serge Delpierre was
Curtis Nelson.
Before we get started, we've paused this film, so let's get you to the same point. When you've popped your DVD in and when it comes up, you're going to see something that says British Board of Film Censors. So get it just so it's to the first frame where it starts coming up and where it says this is to certify that dentists on the job has been passed as suitable. So get that lined up. We're going to keep on talking while you do that. So Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Anybody have fun watching this?
When don't you have fun watching this?
I guess. Does anyone have some fond memories of seeing this for the first time?
I do. Can I share something? I used to do speech and debate in high school, and we had a friend who would go to different schools and speak in a British accent for the whole time and say that he was a foreign exchange student. Mm-hmm. And he would just randomly say lines from Monty Python, such as, you know, I fart in your general direction mm-hmm. and other things. And it was, and chicks dug it. They really thought he was British. And it was good childhood memories.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Wow. All right.
So to George,
Curtis.
Well, I mean, yeah. For my generation, what do you not like about? To me, my Monty Python experience encompasses all their work, and you know, every one is just different. And whether it's the Flying Circus or the Holy Grail or Life of Brian, I love them. I can't get enough of them, and they are silly, stupid. And since I've done it in other podcasts, I'll do it in this one as well. My kids absolutely love them and get every joke. They never ask about them. It is just hilarious. It crosses all age groups and intellectual types. I love them.
Nice. Tim?
I say thank God for Monty Python. I mean, what a wonderful group of really ingenious minds that came together through comedy and just shook everything up, and nothing was the same after I first saw them, for me. I mean, all the rules were broken compared to what I thought, you know, the structure of things was, mm-hmm. was should be. I was at a loss the first few times I saw them on television. Just they were always on PBS. They always reran Monty Python shows. So I saw snippets here and there, and I just had no idea what I was watching. I didn't get it. I was too young. I just didn't get it. Then after growing a little older, I started getting it, and I just haven't stopped getting it ever since, far as just laughing my butt off.
Right.
Thank God for them, because they just shook everything up and made it their own, and what a wonderful contribution to comedy.
George.
John, you were going to say something? I can talk otherwise.
Yeah, go ahead.
Fine. Let's see. Enjoyed Monty Python in high school. Used to be on the CBC Channel 6 and used to watch it. And, of course, in school we'd go around talking in high-pitched voices about piston engines, and we always thought it was very funny. And then, of course, the movies came out. So this was kind of a bit of a change, because we'd been watching the TV show and, like, here's the movie. And they just took the whole Arthurian legend and went kablooey. So quite a lot to enjoy here. And, of course, they followed that with, of course, Life of Brian and then Meaning of Life, which were enjoyable for different reasons. But I think this one, I think I prefer the most. And the interesting thing is my nephew, of all people, my nephew's 13 years old, and he loves Monty Python and the Holy Grail. He just loves it. Well, I mean, and to attest to the strength of the concept, they've even turned it into a Broadway show called Spamalot, mm-hmm. which is basically the same darn thing. So anyway, anything else, John? Did it come back to you?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. So we can start watching the movie, and then we're going to have plenty to talk about.
Sounds good.
Plenty. Okay. So anyway, I hope you're all cued to once again to the British Board of Film Censors thing. So on my count, I'm going to count 3, 2, 1, play, and then we'll play. So 3, 2, 1, play. I'm glad we're going to see Dentist on the Job.
I just want to say this got me. When I watched this recently, because I thought it obviously was a joke, and then it just kept going and going, and I was like, shit, maybe I really do have the wrong disc.
Yeah.
There.
Well, it's like the beginning of Amalgamated. It's like the beginning of Meaning of Life when they start off the whole thing at the Crimson Crimson Insurance. Oh my God.
I think there was an actual Magna Amalgamated. That's what they were spoofing. Shirley Eaton.
Shirley Eaton was in Goldfinger, wasn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she was one of the...
I think she was the one on the bed.
Yeah, that was Shirley Eaton. She was very famous British talent.
Oh, wait, do we have the wrong DVD in?
Mm. Yes, we must.
Wait, John, what did you give me?
Well, I thought this was more important than Mighty Python.
Oh, man. Speech. Okay, well, you know what? Dentist on the Job, I'm willing to watch. All right.
This is actually a testament to the humor of Monty Python. Yeah. Is so hilarious that they were so part of the counterculture movement in England,
mm-hmm. right?
In that time, it was unbelievable that the way they bucked the system so much.
Yeah,
and so this is almost a fitting start to their fame almost.
Yeah,
especially for here in America.
And what's so great is. It actually starts. You know, at the end of the credits, I was like, okay, that.
I mean, they just broke all the rules. They didn't give a shit what anybody thought. They're just like, you know what? We're doing our comedy. Sit
back
and enjoy.
We're going to change it up. Yeah. That's well, it's sleight of hand.
What year did this come out? Serge, do we know?
1975.
How famous was Monty Python at this point? Was it just TV only?
Actually, interesting thing. I think basically, John, you got to look at me while I say this.
Yeah, please.
Basically, that's on the DVD. I've never seen that before.
Okay.
So I've only seen this. Yeah. So I think it's a pretty new thing. So, yeah.
Well,
for anyone who basically
them.
Didn't see that first part with the dentist on the job thing, and we're now into the movie. I like the subtitles. Of course, you have the subtitles.
The subtitles also.
Also weak.
Also weak.
Well, I mean...
what language is that? Is that Swedish?
Is it Nordic or something like that?
Norse? Swedish? Like, Finnish?
I think it's like a made-up...
I think it's a made-up
course. Because like you can read it because it's also English, weak. But it's like bad English.
Looks like something that would be on an Ingmar Bergman film.
Why not try it?
It's Swedish.
Oh, Swedish.
It's
Swedish. Your answer.
It's faux Swedish. Okay, there's my answer.
Yeah, that's just funny.
But here, they're subverting. I mean, they're basically subverting the titles. You have the titles, and this is what we want to tell you.
What's so great, too, is that it really introduces comedy.
The wonderful telephone system.
Absolutely.
But to go back to Tim's question of where were they right now, I mean, they were successful in England for being kind of a pop culture show. But they had...
There's a Nixon joke, very important, of its time.
They had tried getting him off the air, and the studio heads... kind of let them go on their own, didn't expect them to become who they were, and they became this huge, 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 that's huge right. following, cult following. And then this film was shot for absolutely no money.
Right, there was no budget.
Absolutely no money. And they only did it to shoot a movie.
Right.
So this was their first feature film.
A moose bit my sister.
And they had nothing.
That's right.
And that's also why you get some of the jokes.
Yeah.
Like the coconut joke. That all stemmed from them having no budget.
Right. That's right. No horses.
What?
Well, that's what I really realized because I've been kicking around making, low-budget stuff with my kids. And it's just like, well, we just make it silly stupid and it'll be totally cool as if we meant it.
Well, but I think they're silly stupid. It is.
By.
Yeah. Jutta Hermsgervorden Borta Borta.
You know what I like about Monty Python and have always liked? And once they got the budgets, they did even more. They're so cinematic.
Oh, absolutely.
If you look, these people know what they're doing, and they know film.
Well, that's what I was
history of film.
Well, it's like Meaning of Life at the beginning. That's very, very filmic. Very well. Everything about the moose.
Wasn't this the first thing that Gilliam and Jones ever filmed?
Well, this was the first film. This is the first film that they made. They'd been doing the TV shows.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like they just keep on carrying the joke on and on and on and on and on. It's great. I think I did something in some of my student films. I did joke. Titles like that, inspired by Monty Python, of course, Ralph the Wonder Llama.
Sort of brings to my mind what Mel Brooks was doing in Young Frankenstein.
Or Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, but especially as far as homage to film and just how cinematic, this has that same sort of take on it.
Well, Blazing Saddles, he was cinematic, but also he was subverting all the different genres and the jokes.
Right.
I mean, going left and right. Young Frankenstein is great because it's all about one thing, and it just follows that track very well. How are we on structure so far, John?
Yeah. Good luck. Here we go.
Are the titles good?
This is the thing that they don't. Yeah, they don't. They don't do structure here at the beginning, where they have the supposedly a hypothesis statement of how you should live life, unless you want to say you should have a horse.
how you should live. So the hypothesis statement should come here, is what you're saying.
Yeah, usually within the first 5 minutes, but sometimes up to the first 15.
I think when Arthur meets actually someone, he does the hypothesis of life. He says, "I'm on the quest for the Grail."
No, but usually it's something much more simpler, like smart people aren't popular.
That's a real castle, by the way.
It's a miniature?
Yeah. No, it's a real castle.
It's a real castle. That's Terry Gilliam on the left.
Yes.
For those people that don't know. Graham Chapman on the right.
Yes.
And for those of people who don't know, Terry Gilliam is not British.
American.
He's American.
Hmm. Well, they're able to rent a fog machine.
Yeah.
Oh, looks great. That's a Gilliam shot.
Pull the other one. I love that Gilliam's direct, and he really shows the size of things. Like whenever it's shots,
yeah.
So, like,
yes,
you really
mammoth
see the,
scope.
Whoa, look at that!
I think you can definitely see the
dramatic. Always dramatic.
This is the best argument on the face of the planet.
Yeah. That's right. They basically
could have 5 ounce bird.
They take see the whole thing is we accepted the fact that he was like using coconuts, and he just like tears it apart. It's like, you're just using coconuts.
I probably will do very little commentating in this movie. Just listen. It's genius.
And it's great. It's the way it's written. He makes him sound like a king.
Absolutely. He always talks awesome. Like a king. Yeah.
A small little carrying a coconut.
And now here they're setting up the end.
They do. They actually set up the entering right. The dark. Yeah, I think
it's the very end for crossing the bridge would lead to the very end.
Exactly. Which King Arthur tries something new, which is he asks questions rather
than answering.
Ridiculous.
That's right.
Right.
He turns it around on the
yes,
bridge keeper.
He does.
I love it when Cleese comes in.
John Cleese.
What I love is that they're basically taking an insane little argument and they're basically arguing a kid to death.
Right.
Like they know everything about that one little thing.
They just won't let it die.
It's like, never mind, we're going.
Cross the line.
Time to go.
What also shows you how much you can do with so little money. Oh. If the writing is
if fine. The writing is there.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Sweet.
But once again, it's the type of humor that they're exercising too. I like that smoke once again.
Just absurd. Just a sense of the absurd.
And
now
puts you in the place and time. I mean, their 10th century is an ugly, muddy place. And, of course, they make a joke about it.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I absolutely love that they played every character.
Yeah, yeah.
Multiple characters in every right. film. Yeah. You're like, oh, wait, there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is not a pretty past.
No.
This is the Dark Ages.
Not exactly the sequence I would have wanted to have been an extra in.
Think about it. When the previous Arthur big film had been Camelot, the musical, and everything was gorgeous and golden and
romantic.
Fancy. And here it's like everything's just like very muddy.
Well,
you can just feel the pestilence in the air.
Exactly.
I'm not dead.
I love when he whacks him.
And that would be Eric Idle on the left, correct?
Yes, and I think that's Graham Chapman carrying the guy. It is.
No, that's
John Cleese.
Oh, is it?
Carrying him.
It's Cleese.
You can tell by the voice. Yeah.
That's great.
You're right.
Now, guys, John Cleese personally is my favorite of the Python troupe. He cracks me up and has for ever since I first saw him in like late 70s.
Don't call me a heretic, but what's the other guy, the skinny guy? What's his name?
Eric Idle
Eric
on
Idle.
The left.
You're heretic.
I don't know.
I like this. It's like a bam.
Well, they were, by the way, they were such social commentators of their own, of breaking down the hierarchy of the English
and class system.
Totally absolutely. The kings in the next scene or the next couple scenes. Oh, it's fabulous. Yeah, this one, they totally rip into kingdom and...
Right. Oh, well, and the British hierarchy of the princes and the kings.
Many interviews I've seen with John Cleese, he comments on the social class distinctions of British
And what's
society.
Amazing is whenever you see them in these open forums speaking, they're highly, highly intelligent men, and they argue their points perfectly, and they often squash the people that are on the other side of the argument just to death.
It's like
these are the intellects of their places.
Mm-hmm. Humor coming from like a very learned, collegiate environment. I feel like, you know, when Conan O'Brien, anywhere his past with Harvard, right? Mm-hmm. And how the comedy was out of that type of environment. Same thing. I get the feeling with out of Monty Python.
Right.
That would be Michael Palin.
That's Michael Palin. Now he's basically they're digging apart the whole class system right in front of the king.
Terry Jones often played the female
women. He had the voice, best voice for women.
He could do the falsetto. It's like they don't even know who are we. We have a king.
Like they're having political arguments and they're digging in the side. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Crazy.
I mean, it's basically, it's tearing apart the whole power structure because like I'm the king and you don't even know.
It's also painting these hermits or these people that are lowly society as actually intelligent. Yeah, they're not as stupid as they made them out to be.
Well, I mean, but you can be lower class and still...
But that's what they're making a point.
Well, I know, but a lot of times, I mean, the stereotype is that lower class people can't argue a single point and don't have anything to say.
That's what makes it funny, Serge.
I know. That's what I'm pointing out, that it takes the British to do this.
What are they doing with the dirt?
No mud.
What's their business?
Mud pies?
Farcical.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, you know, he's tearing apart the whole Arthurian legend, which was all crafted to give reason for why there should be a monarchy. I'm being repressed. Oh, man. This is brilliant stuff.
Yeah. And it's nice music for a low-budget
John
film.
It's like John Daly doing his good work, being the one person with some humor and insight into some things that are going on.
For the budget that they had when you see the making of this film, sometimes they get some really nice shots out of just having nothing and just doing it. You're like, wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I like about this is, I mean... the fact that they're just going linearly, and here they go into cross-cutting between two sequences with the music.
Again, very cinematic.
Very. And I think that's more the Gilliam stuff. Look at those swords! Those are huge! Long.
It's just classic sequence after classic sequence now in this film, isn't it?
What's nice, too, is that this is actually some nice action.
The action in this, it's very visceral, very big and broad. It's not fakey. You know, the swords are heavy, they hurt.
It's a nice smack.
And also the violence is, the violence gets rather cartoonish.
Yes.
Yeah, this feels like Gilliam.
My kids, this is their favorite part, obviously. And one of the most quotable lines of the film is easily coming up.
Oh! Love the blood.
That's nasty.
It is. Now,
Your kids are okay with that?
Oh, they love it. You know what?
And I'm try that okay on your kids,
two.
Man.
Go I'm ahead. Okay with it too, because in some way it fits, because that is what would happen if you get stabbed in the face.
I like how Arthur is pretending to ride his horse. He's like he's holding the bridle.
All right.
Watch him next time. He's holding a. It's like he's holding a bridle. I like that you can't see the knight's face at all.
So structure-wise, this is the 15 minutes where he gets very specific. I'm building my court. Come join me.
Oh, okay.
And so that's what this movie's about. He's building his.
Do we know whose voice that is? I don't recognize him.
You know, I don't know. I like how he just moves.
Yeah.
Very simply. It's like, I'm the king. I can fight very easily.
That's right.
I'm never in danger.
I am better than you.
Boom. He's a very placid look on his face. Boom. Now... Have you all seen this done on YouTube with lightsabers?
Oh, no.
Someone's actually done it where they put lightsabers for the sword.
Oh, really?
That's yeah.
That's funny.
This is like Sam Peckinpah on steroids, the amount of blood they're using.
And he's like, come on, come on. I'm not going to give up.
It's just
how many times have we all said it's just
line,
a
Curtis?
It's just a flesh wound,
and the kids get it. And
it almost sounds like
I like how his crown is just slightly tilted during this whole thing.
Black Knight's voice almost sounded like John Cleese to me.
It does.
Yeah.
A few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is Cleese.
Bastards!
It's very Bastard. John Cleese. Yeah, that's John Cleese.
Genius. Genius in the absurdity of it.
Oh,
all.
Once again. You know, you're led into it. You think it's going to be one thing, and...
They just rip it the whole apart.
Bam!
Yeah.
I feel like I should be stoned right now.
Yeah. Right.
It'd be just as much fun.
But more.
I feel more. Stoned watching this. Well, that's actually, interestingly enough, what this does is this is the kind of humor that it just subverts all your expectations and you can't help but give up, I guess.
Any preconceived ideas you had?
Preconceived ideas. I mean, you can't help but laugh and just kind of like lighten up. Mm-hmm. There's just no choice because.
Oh yeah, it's so ridiculous. It's so
right. Well, that's it. It's but it, I know it's what.
Look,
it's
look at, do you see this? Did you see what he was doing?
Yeah,
he's
the
tying a coconut to a bird.
He's trying out the theory.
Well, he's a scientist. Look at it.
But what is? It's absurd. I mean, it's absurd. Absurdism. It's absurdity. And by being absurd, you release from the normal circumstances, and you have to give in to the absurd circumstances that anything can be possible.
And to me, Monty Python's films, it just shows what a silly race we are. When you look at mankind, we really are silly. What we choose to go by sometimes and what we believe is, you know, unchanging in how we see things. And
what do you mean?
And they just rip it apart.
Okay.
They step outside the box, you know, and say, look at how, just because you believe it, is this the way it is?
Yeah.
Well, like, I mean, they're obviously they're tearing apart the Dark Ages and ignorance. She's a witch.
But if you watch The Meaning of Life, I mean, if you watch,
well, there
I mean, they just
turn
to everyone.
Yeah.
But we are a silly people when you look at it. what we just do in life.
Got better.
That's right.
Look at Cliche. You're talking about his commitment. Yeah. His eyes were crossed.
He can do rage. I love the way he does rage.
This is so great. He like tries to use logic in a totally insane way.
Froze him on that one.
I like the fact that he almost answered, but
yes, twice. Yeah. He worked it.
They're made of wood. Okay.
And he was very hesitant. They're made of wood. And the girl.
She's in all their films, in all their TV shows. What
she was especially in Fawlty Towers. I forget her name, but she was married to John Cleese, wasn't she?
There you go.
Ooh, I don't know.
She was involved with John Cleese, and they were writing partners on Fawlty Towers, and they got a divorce, I think, or broke up during the show.
So I like how he's just like taking the logic, and it's insane logic.
Like what also floats in water? Very tiny rocks.
That's right.
But see, as lunatic as this scene is, it's all pointing to the fact of now how does Arthur get the attention of these people?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think that they had so much fun making this.
But on the contrary, they didn't. They were miserable.
You know, that's what I usually hear out of Monty Python lore.
Really?
And the shoot was atrocious. It was horrible.
Good things come
from
horrible situations.
Okay, why?
Well, so explain to me now. The duck is supposed to weigh more than her?
I think they're supposed to weigh the same.
They're supposed to weigh the same, but then... Hang on. I like the hammers.
And she has the best line.
What did she say?
It's a fair cop. That's her one line for her character.
That's right. So all that crazy logic was right.
Well, but to go back to what you were saying about the shoot, everybody that is even close to being a fan of Monty Python has to see the documentary Almost the Truth, which is a long, long documentary of their just whole existence, basically Monty Python. But then when they're covering this, it's just trouble after trouble, whether it's financial, whether it's...
It no one agreeing as well?
That, I mean, Terry Gilliam and Terry Jones just had the hell of a time working together. At one point, they wouldn't even be on set together, and they would even plan out days where one would be somewhere else shooting something. So it was crazy.
What I like about this part is it all gets very meta, and then it basically uses that to take you all the way through to a later point in the narrative, so he doesn't have to cover all of that. Of course, making fun of the whole thing. But they break down the fact that, this is a film, so we're just going to take you through the next parts of it.
And what's...
Don't even... Gorilla hand.
And then watch, they're all holding their bridles. See? Yeah. What?
Sheep plan.
Now that's a miniature.
That's a miniature.
That's a miniature, yes. But the other castle was...
Done very well for their budget, I might say.
Yeah.
And you got to love Monty Python's musical interludes. They do the best, especially The Meaning of Life. Oh, my gosh.
And most of them were written by Idol, I believe. He came up with a lot of
Has anyone
movies.
here seen Spamalot?
I've not, no.
Okay. I'm assuming you have, Tim, John.
No, I have not. I'm sorry. I was really busy watching the choreography. I got distracted. Sorry, guys.
Man. That was Gilliam.
And speaking of documentaries, that's wonderful. The prisoner in on the festivities. But
I wonder if Mel Brooks stole that.
Terry Gilliam, the documentary on when he tried to make Don Quixote with Johnny Depp. Mm-hmm. just from filmmakers' point of view, just what it takes to make a film in in this day and age. It's an awesome documentary. I got a tremendous amount of respect for Terry Gilliam from that documentary.
It was called, I think, Lost in La Mancha.
That's right.
Thanks, I like this.
It's a big buildup, like, and then we go, no.
Let's not go. Yeah, once again, let's get meta.
That's the comedy.
I think, actually, Gilliam is in the process of doing the Don Quixote film. Of trying
to try it again, huh?
Yep.
Good for him.
There you go. There's Terry Gilliam's animations. Yeah.
And that's how they came across him. He was just
an animator.
Animator that was very well known, or maybe not well known, but either way.
I like how they're breaking down the whole thing about what God is.
This style of animation is absolutely iconic in my mind to Monty Python.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
you can identify it one and only with Monty Python. You know, this is them. This is their style.
Is this a structure point there, John?
Yeah. What often happens, 15 is often what the movie's about, which doesn't really follow this exactly, because this is actually at 22. But 15 is what the movie's about, and that's when he was saying, let's get all these guys together. 22 is often a situation where they make a decision to go into the new world or go on the mission. That's very nice.
Woo.
I've never saw the... That's very nice.
And so this is the new world they're moving into.
Yeah. They haven't gone on the quail, or they haven't gone on the search yet.
The quest. Well, here's the quest.
This is it. Yeah.
And to go into the quest, basically what they've done is they've directed it so they have all the animation that leads up to into it, and they're now into the action.
And then this is the new world for them.
But
they're
all
now
going
on. And it all looks the same thing. But that was actually the interesting thing is, directorially, that was a good way to lead us into the new world by having that animation and saying,
but yet
here
it all stemmed from the budget.
Yes.
Well, no, but exactly. But by having limited budget, they could also make fun of the fact that they didn't have much and still use the, I mean, if you want to call them tricks, they're tricks. They still help shape things directorially.
Yeah.
Curtis, the documentary you were talking about, the Monty Python documentary, does it go into the animation as far
almost
as
the
does
truth.
It show
well, it goes into the
how
animation.
Terry Gilliam actually accomplished this animation? Because it looks very good
for
their budget.
Well, they just go into how... where they found him, and I can't remember exactly.
I'd like to see his animation table, see what he had to work with. That would be very interesting.
The whole documentary is basically told through their stories and their retelling of the stories of, okay, I remember one time, you know, Terry Jones did this. And,
right.
And then, but a lot of it's accompanied with documentary footage of the time. So it's great. Fantastic. And it's a long documentary. My favorite part here.
I'm lightly familiar with Monty Python, but I'm not a diehard cultist.
Yeah, neither am I, but I love them. They're funny, but...
How does that... I mean, I know them for the movies, and I kind of, you know, I know who they are.
Because you definitely have levels. I know people that are so into them, they know every detail of their entire arc of their career.
Gilliam's awesome. I mean, Gleese... But they often made fun of the French, too. That's what I loved.
Oh, did
they?
You have a problem with the French?
Nope.
That's good. Thank you, Curtis.
Silly king.
I'm telling you, John Cleese does it for me. He's cracks me up. And I love it. He's watching himself. He's down on the ground looking up, watching himself.
Well, and the great thing is, structure-wise, I mean, he's posing about as much of an obstacle as he can to these guys.
Yeah.
He's saying, "You big fat pompous idiots,
I love how he chews.
Screw you!"
Like he chews like an old man with no teeth.
Yeah, right. Food drop whopper.
Genius.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
I taunt you a second time.
Now I want to know who he's acting to. when they shot this. No. Is it just him and a couple of people around a camera, and he just comes up with his character?
You have the camera pointed up, and he's talking down there.
The script super is
throwing the lines, and they go. Yeah, and there goes the cow.
Nice miniature.
Good shot.
There's many a theory that they were on drugs. I don't know if this is true. But they were in... They started
Retreat.
Animals at him.
This one's for your mother!
It's awesome.
Run away!
Run away.
Mm-hmm. Run away!
It's so funny how many lines this is bringing back I've used in my life.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is like you'll run into people through, or at least I have run into people throughout my life of different social classes that just get it, and they'll spout off a line, and you're like, holy crap, this guy is a Python fan.
Right.
Right. Well, I mean, how many times did we say this is a flesh wound?
I mean, as an artist, what a wonderful thing that your work is incorporated into society like that.
Yeah.
I like this.
Over time.
All this is a shot.
To be embraced
just,
like that.
It's just looking around and just hearing signs.
He's just listening like a dog that hears an odd sound. He's like...
Mm-hmm. I mean, again, it's nice, it's cheap, and it's wonderful cinema.
Yeah.
Works out. And nothing's ever as funny as what it is in your own mind, in your own imagination. So when you have everything happening off camera, it's you doing the comedy in your own head. That's great.
And also, when you want to talk about budget, here, all they're showing are the wheels.
And that's what you call doing a take.
He can't wrap his mind around it.
That's right.
Yeah, once again, this is a real castle, by the way.
That's a real castle?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that a real rabbit?
They cover that in the
Is that a real rabbit?
They talk about some of the, they talk about some of the
Is that a real
there.
Rabbit?
Is this the same castle they used for the
I think
first
it was.
One?
I think they used only a couple in the whole film.
Just dude from a different side.
What did you say?
What did you say, Terry?
It's a rabbit. Rabbit made of wood.
Did you really say that?
Yes.
That's cool.
It's a gift. It's a present.
And they're speaking in English. I could figure that out.
Just in case you missed that part. This is, of course, a reference to the Trojan rabbit.
The Trojan rabbit?
Yes.
What is it with rabbits in this film?
You see, that's the thing.
And then they shoot it back at him. That's the best.
Oh, that's Gilliam.
Oh
nice
man. Shot. Yeah. That was not miniature. Doesn't look like that's miniature to me.
They dropped that.
No, that's not.
Beautiful.
See, now we're getting all getting all meta.
And they take it the next step. I love that. They just go the next step to the next step. And then they cut. You know, my favorite element in comedy to me, what registers the most, is the sense of the absurd.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love.
Well, you get it in spades here.
Yeah.
Certain death.
Which way do you go? I mean, you think about it, too. A lot of these costumes are real. I mean, they're. Yeah.
But look at his shield. What's his shield? It's a chicken.
Oh. Well, yeah, it looks like they spend some money, obviously, on...
Well, it is a cock.
I mean, it's real chainmail. I mean, yeah. They have...
Oh, yeah. But definitely, I mean, working out in nature, so to speak, and just focusing on costumes. Well, there's a lot of production value in this. There's a lot, quite frankly.
But...
I like the casting. If you look at the faces, and just they're all great.
I love the EQ on their voices.
Dead people only.
It is a great testament to low budget.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, and it's so funny because then you can go really high budget and it's not as entertaining. So it really goes, entertaining is more important than the money spent.
Yeah, I'd rather have, you know, great ideas, ingenious wit. Mm-hmm. With not the world's greatest presentation, dollar-wise, as compared to slick, 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 but nothing of substance about it.
The tail.
Now, with the tale of Sir Robin and now Galahad, are we hitting any structure points, or how is this kind of throwing things up in the air, or how's this working?
It just, where they went with is... We're going to do each individual person's story.
Right.
No. The where we get into the really the next thing is the 45-minute scene, how the movie will end. And that will be the new world is them going on the quest and then them splitting up. So we're in the new world and we got 15 minutes.
So basically we're seeing each of their adventures and each story
exactly.
tells its own.
Yeah.
So with Robin was, you know, clearly here he's supposed to be brave and all he can do is basically run away. And then, of course, he's got his little, got his minstrel to keep on reminding him and us that he's a coward.
Right. And this guy is supposed to be chaste.
Chased.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, that's my God, that's right.
Same actress that was the witch.
No, I think it's a separate one. But no, it's a different actress. But those two women are in all of Monty Python stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is a separate one. I recognize her from a lot of different things that Monty Python did. She appeared a lot on their TV show, this one.
It looks like Helen Mirren. Mm-hmm.
The other actress is skinnier compared to this one.
I like the castle they're shooting this in. Mm-hmm.
It's a nice tracking shot.
And, mm-hmm. and the lights are neat. There's just one light, one light, and they walk in front of it. Here. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Nice exit line.
Yeah.
Right. And here he is. He's the chased. He's trying to find the Grail, and he thinks he's found it. And
she's great.
Basic medical training.
Dr. Piglet?
Dr. Winston.
Dr. Piglet. I love the harp.
Yeah. But it's interesting. It basically his goal, which is to find the Grail.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, I was a little transfixed by Zoot's identical sister.
Yeah.
The fact is he can't see it, and so they're the obstacle, but basically it's an answer to a question he doesn't have.
Wicked, bad, evil, naughty. Wow. That's funny.
Yes. What is that?
Wow.
Exactly. They're like, come on.
That's funny. Are they the king of non sequiturs or what?
Yeah.
Well, they're the king of meta.
Well, it's also nice that they set it up in the titles with them talking directly to us. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So this doesn't come out of nowhere. They've let us know that this is going to happen.
This is also the time. At this time, oh, if you watch the documentary, yeah. The British were so well reserved and uptight about this kind of comedy.
And
this
I like this. They're like, it's like, I don't want to be rescued.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, no.
Oh, yeah. To say oral sex back then, I had to be just like,
yeah,
outrageous.
75, yeah.
Especially in Britain.
Especially in Britain.
Yeah. That's great. Checking behind them, that's very healthy.
That's right, watch out, they're coming.
There's a gorilla
hand. Has to do with that coconut thing.
Ah. I wonder how cold it was on all their exterior stuff.
Probably,
it cannot be nice. It can't be good.
All right. This vital clue is your scene 45 scene.
Page 45 scene, right?
Yeah. I was going to end.
I think that's Gilliam.
Yeah. Look at the makeup on his right eye. What's that film over his... That's gross.
Yeah, it looks like a contact.
No, no, you're looking at his left eye.
Yeah, his
right eye. Oh, the film.
Screen left,
oh, that's
his
just
right
like
eye.
Some spirit.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just grody.
Ooh. And they're gone. Has anyone here seen Excalibur?
I do. It's a great, great film.
It's a great film. Saw it recently.
Shot so it's by?
Now, Helen Mirren wasn't that.
Helen Mirren. Oh, yes. Was she ever in that? Who's it shot by?
His name is escaping me now. The director of...
That's John Borman, isn't it?
That's John Borman, who's the director. Yeah.
Director of...
I like this telephoto shot.
Famous Burt Reynolds. What are you...
Famous Burt
Reynolds. Deliverance.
Yes, there you go. Thank you.
Well, that was Borman.
That was Hal Needham.
Hal Needham.
We digress.
But anyway, back to
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Well, Arthurian legend. Oh, it's a nice Hussein knee.
Yes.
Knee.
Now, is that someone on stilts rather than someone being very foreground and
no,
then being background?
No, he's on stilts.
Yeah, okay. I'm just trying to see how they did the shot. Mm-hmm. My high school, I mean, this brings back my high school years. I remember... Yeah. The funny guys in drama club and everything doing all the lines, quoting all this, and I really hadn't seen it.
Oh, yeah.
The whole movie, but this is bringing back my high school years. I feel like I'm in drama class.
The Knights of Nick.
I got a question. Is Monty Python like the Three Stooges in respect to that men get it and women usually don't overall? Like the Three Stooges are known as a guys thing. Is Monty Python the same way? Do women get into Monty Python?
My experience is yes, but I haven't read any polls or studies on that. But yeah.
Do your wives get Monty Python?
My wife doesn't.
I don't think Amy would have any. She would just walk out of the room and do something else.
Yeah, I think we're answering the question
is
right
it just,
here.
Yeah,
I
absurd
think we're gonna make
silly
a general statement. Now, this is important.
This is really important because this is right with the scene 45 scene, and that's what actually happens at the end.
Yeah,
right. It's all part of that, essentially that subplot. That
that fits into your
actually does. Yeah.
Yet they did that pretty much. They had no idea how to end the movie.
Okay.
And that was not planned. And they were just like, all right, let's just get arrested. Yeah. And that's how they finished.
But in the context of the film, we can talk about it later, but it makes sense because the Holy Grail is never really found. That's the point of the quest.
But also, it would have not, it would have. I would say it would work a lot less if we wouldn't have started the investigation off the historian's death a lot earlier. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You just can't have...
Right, didn't come out of nowhere.
It's great color in this animation.
I just think great concepts. Like the sun's jumping up and down and has to go sink.
And then you get nighttime.
Sleep.
That's a trip.
That's great.
Does anyone else have a favorite Python performer out of the troupe that sticks out in your minds?
I don't think they're all
to
great.
To me, it's John Cleese and Michael Palin, I think.
Palin, I always liked him. I thought he was great. Did everything.
John, any standout from the group for you?
The guy that always acts like a woman with a high voice.
Terry Jones.
Thank you. Terry Jones.
I like them all.
But I've grown... I like Idol in some of the other films. I like Idol in like A Meaning of Life, and I love his songs.
Oh yeah,
so good.
All right, if I had to pick, I'd say Michael Palin.
Who plays Jesus in the Life of Jesus or Life of Brian?
No, you never see Jesus.
I'm sorry, who plays
that's
Brian?
Graham Chapman.
Brian is Graham.
Okay.
You mean Mel Gibson stole this for Braveheart?
Stole what?
the alpha male dad with the gay son. Oh. Herbert.
I'm trying to remember Braveheart. Who was the alpha male
remember
father?
He throws the boyfriend over the ledge and everything, and, and his son is an incompetent prince who's just going to take over the throne.
Who wants to sing?
Yeah, he wanted to sing, that's for sure. But man, they gave Gibson hell for that. He's a gay basher and everything else.
Here's our song. Oh. I like how they made Palin's character balding. That's funny.
What I like is that have they managed to make Palin seem so much larger than Terry Jones? When usually that's not the case.
I just love that they make this.
Wonderful interplay. Boy, they knew how to play off each other.
Yeah. And they just, this goes on for like another 2 minutes, it feels.
But
like.
Once again, it's getting what they're doing is they're picking on the detail and just they're just spooling it out
turning
as far
it into
as
the
they
absurd.
Can.
Yeah,
well, totally it's not absurd. It's not just turning it into the absurd, but showing that people in authority also don't know their head from the fucking hole in the ground either is what they kind of look at a lot of the time whenever they do this stuff. They're making fun of the intelligent part of society more so than they are the lower class.
So you'd say establishment?
Yeah, they're just totally making fun of the establishment in most cases.
So whenever they're doing this, they're doing it with an authority figure who's giving them an instruction. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, okay. These guys are clueless. So you basically they're just tipping the scales the other way.
And that's exactly what Arthur does at the bridge to get the other guy thrown into the eternal pit of doom or whatever the heck it's called instead of himself.
So basically what you're saying is Arthur adopts the strategy of everyone else.
And
finally, that's what he learns.
At
that's
the beginning of Act 3, right, is that you have to try something new to achieve your goal.
It makes me wonder how much of this was actually written and how much is improv. Or if any was improv.
Mm-hmm. Well, the yeah. No,
well,
I totally
think maybe the situations may have been... No, the dialogue may have been improvised, but I think definitely the situations were planned out. And it said, well, we can get from here to there and we can work it out because that's what we can
do.
I wonder how loose these performers were, that if they needed to have it on the page, locked, so no one would bicker, no one would fight, it was established and done, and then you act it. Or if they were able to be loose enough on set to be inspired and go with it.
Right.
That'd be interesting to know.
Yeah.
Don't know what he's up to. It's very funny. Yeah. It's good. Ooh, this guy, he's good.
That's Terry Jones.
That's Terry Jones?
Yeah.
That's Terry Jones. That's what I was saying. They transformed him.
Okay. When you said about Michael Palin being bigger.
Yeah.
That's who you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, because usually Michael Palin, I thought, is the smallest.
Yeah. That is a great line.
Concord.
I mean, I think they use the Arthurian legend obviously to make fun of the whole thing. They're just making fun of all these kinds of films that have been coming out for the past 20 years in the 50s and 60s.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, this is their spoof. Well, it's their version of. Of these things, but it's their spoof film. So in a way, they're like Mel Brooks.
That's what it reminded me of. Yeah.
Like Blazing Saddles, which is, you know, definitely, let's take the Western apart.
You know, because all the films they grew up on, I'm sure it came to their minds as they were writing this.
Yeah.
They wanted to have, each one wanted to have their shot at they all wanted meant to something to them.
They wanted to play knights.
You know what? Another thing about John Cleese, just from an actor's point of view, I always believe him. No matter how ludicrous, he bases it in some reality for himself. I believe him, what he does.
It all look,
And that's a tremendous compliment. Oh, this woman this cracks me up.
I also think that by rooting this film in, you know, essentially Arthur and the Holy Grail, they're rooting it in a very, well, basically very British story. Mm-hmm. It can't be confused with any other culture story. It's definitely a British story. Mm-hmm. And ripping on British history.
I just love how he comes in and slaughters her.
Yeah, I know. That's just so insane.
Yeah! They had some budget here.
Probably the biggest budget of the whole movie.
But it's probably the same castle, just a different entrance.
I wonder how many favors were called in because the money wasn't there.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I remember this.
Who all was working for free,
it's the drum roll,
you know,
him
just
running
to help out. I mean,
of him running from way back. And but he comes back and he's and they shot again.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And what I love about it is it subverts basically your expectation of the next shot of what's supposed to happen next. It's like, okay, well, how many times can we do this? All right.
And then it becomes funny because I firmly believe that humor is just all about something happening that you didn't expect happening.
Exactly. Yeah. And now they basically subverted the expectation. Like, all right, and all right, it's going to keep on happening. And boom.
That's
and that
great
guy just watches.
And
you.
That's what made that's what that's exactly what made that funny.
Yeah.
Any when wannabe editor should watch that scene.
For people with apples in it. Stabbing chicks.
Oh. The most gory sketch in their TV show I ever saw was called A Sunny Day.
Yes.
Remember that sketch, Curtis? And this reminds me of that.
They went to the insane many a time.
Yeah. Just, I'd never seen blood used to the effect that they used to use it in their stuff.
She kicked the bride.
For comedy, of all things.
Or in The Meaning of Life, that the scene where there's a whole movie with Forrest Whitaker and Jude Law that just came out where they're going and they're collecting people's body parts.
Oh, Repo Man.
In Repo Man, yeah. But that whole concept is a Monty Python bit where they go in there going, is this your liver donor card? And he's like, no. And they're just slaughtering this poor fella.
Look at that wind.
Look at that fire.
Yeah, it's going to set the tapestry on fire. But it's balanced nicely with the light outside the window.
That's a lot of wind coming in.
Yeah, it's a drafty place they're in.
So do they have to loop this whole thing?
Yeah. They had to have.
Yeah.
It's a lot of wind.
I don't know. You can hear the wind pretty well.
Huh.
Yeah.
Maybe it was production sound. Possibly.
Ooh.
Oh.
This is like the Wild Bunch here. Look at that.
I love how he's like explaining what they're going to do with the rebuild.
Yeah.
They wrecked those costumes.
Sorry.
Are you guys familiar with Fawlty Towers? Has anyone here seen
it? I'm familiar with it, but I've not seen all the episodes or only a couple.
I'm telling you, it's the best.
Yeah.
My dad was a very big fan of Fawlty Towers.
Yeah. Anyone who's interested in the work of John Cleese has
and
to see
Fawlty
Towers.
And they now have
them
on DVD, too.
Yeah. Yeah, they just remastered them, as a matter of fact. Yeah. It was one season John Cleese could not keep up the pace of the writing. Mm-hmm. And you look at each episode, they are films. I mean, they are that dense in writing.
Wow.
Hmm. And it was the girl who was they were burning as a witch.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She was the writing partner, and they could not keep up the pace of what it took to crank them out. So after one season, they had to end the show.
Wow.
Mm. After one season?
Yeah.
Wow.
If you want comments on class distinction in the British society, Fawlty Towers has it in spades.
He's dying. I like how he's playing the same two characters in the exact same scene talking to each other.
They do.
The point of no return.
That's right. Then everyone who's dead is getting back up.
It's not right for my idiom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is escape.
Yeah.
We'll talk about commentary on writing. That's funny. That little choreography they got going on.
Nice.
It's almost Western music, like a Western.
Yes. All right, so they're back to looking the shrubbery. She's great.
Wow, she doesn't have
not a whole lot of good looks coming from that lineage.
Well, she didn't have any problem being shown less than attractive, did she?
Mm-hmm. You know, structurally, it's interesting. This is feeling a little TV.
Yeah.
Structure-wise. Well, you know, with like the A plot, B plot.
I wonder what their shooting ratio was in this. Do you think they probably did three takes at the most? I mean, just...
Oh, I think it was... Watch the shrubber.
Look at that.
I think
shot.
It's probably... Yeah.
That's one of the few opticals you've ever seen, that wipe right there.
Yeah.
Hmm?
I don't see them doing more than two or three takes.
I'm sure it was expedient.
Yes. I'm sure they did a lot of rehearsal, though, before they rolled.
It's very expensive. A lot of location stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't do...
Well, but in saying that same respect, they didn't have that many interiors. You know, they just had to find a lot of forests to shoot in.
Right, right.
And once again, the costumes...
I doubt if it's all permits and all, you know, properly, do you think?
Permit, you know, when it comes down to it...
Compared to Gorilla...
Permitting's not that bad, you know.
This the second shrubbery thing, this just becomes... So this is where the bad guy is worse than we thought, in the sense that the task that they're being given is impossible to do.
Hmm.
So they... but since this is a comedy and it's ridiculous and absurd, they just walk away from it. As opposed to other movies, you know, they usually have to deal with
right,
it.
That's right. The way they deal with right, it, they just
walk
the
away. They're like, cut down a tree
if
with
all
a herring.
Movies,
and
if all
like,
movies
no.
were like that, it'd yeah. be very boring.
It would be. It wouldn't be the... Right. And pissing yourself. Hmm.
And so structurally, actually, now Sir Robin joins back up, too.
Yeah. And then the 61 scene, which is when the bad guy's worse than we thought, we usually, the hero has to decide, well, what are we going to do now? And what you'll see is they're going to cut back to, oh, let's get back to what happened in scene 24 and the old guy. So they actually use the 45-minute scene, which is how this movie's going to end. They use it again here to redirect us where we're going. Oh, and it pops in with these course, guys, which yeah. shows us that the cops are going to show up at the end, too.
Hmm.
Scene.
Right.
So that helps remind us what's going on.
Why would we be lost?
That's right. What the heck is going on?
Nice. What is that, shale?
Looks like shale to me.
Something looks like, yeah. Their budget got bigger because look at all these people. Mm-hmm. Nothing else.
Ooh, and pyrotechnics.
Yeah, this is cool.
CG back then was great.
That's right. They were saving it for the end.
It's got a fish.
Again, my first memories, I always saw this out of sequence. I never saw it from beginning to end. That's
really?
A great shot.
Wow.
I saw the killer rabbit.
First.
Yeah, that's and I said, what is this movie?
Yeah.
See, I've never seen this sequence right here.
Oh.
That's
I like
wonderful.
The fact that they actually use fireworks with those screaming whistles and everything.
It reminds me of Sleeping Beauty, the Evil Queen.
Yep.
Same type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's the character said, oh, get on with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's yeah. great.
Right.
Okay. One of the intercuts there.
Tim?
Greetings,
this is,
Tim
I've
the
always
Enchanter.
Heard about this.
great.
I will call you Tim the Enchanter from now
yeah.
on.
Yeah. That's a wonder. Look at that.
That's Cleese.
Yeah. This is wonderful. I've never seen the sequence.
That's fun.
It's a great location.
Uh-huh.
Someone had fun on set that day.
Yeah. Yep.
For some reason, all that rock does not look like England to me, but I'm sure it has to be.
Wow. He spits all over them.
Like, well, being backlit didn't help him with that.
Well, he does it one more time.
Oh, yeah. he's performing, yeah. He's... He's on stage, man. He's doing it. I'm sure he loved it when he saw it.
I like the Scottish accent he's doing, too.
Yeah. What a strange choice.
Yeah. All right. So the helping scene usually shows up at 75 minutes, but since this is a 90-minute comedy as opposed to a two-hour movie, it actually showed up at 69 minutes.
Wow. Right.
So things are a little condensed.
Right.
But this guy's helping.
Right, because okay. right now we're actually, see, they got off their horses. They had their bridles and they dismounted. They're all crazy. Yeah, this is definitely third act.
No, not third act yet.
This is not
third act is when the Bridge of Death.
Then the third act is like very, very short.
Oh, yeah, it is. Well, the whole, yeah. Usually in 90-minute films, the third act's the shortest.
Okay.
They usually sometimes crunch the whole third act within.
I love all the carcasses.
Curtis, did your kids like the rabbit?
Well, of course. You tit.
You.
Scotch kid.
I like Terry Gilliam in the back. Look at him.
We still put this helmet on, which is fun.
Well, that way they can do this.
I've done it again.
No.
No. Top. Charge.
Like how a rabbit just becomes like a ninja rabbit.
I see the string. I saw the wire.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, it's funny.
Just flying
it's
back
great.
And forth.
Great.
Focus puller's having a day.
So yeah.
Run away again.
That was a tough one.
So Robin's in front of them all.
They're calling back to that again. And the poor bunny is covered in red.
So much for math.
The holy hand grenade. Oh my God.
Latin, baby.
You got like the incense burner.
Oh my God.
And what do you say?
That's cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fruit bats. Yeah, like that.
Here comes the never-ending joke.
That's good.
And now the tie's back. That's right.
Yep.
The detective.
And once again, it was, you know, it was subverting authority, essentially authority of of religion, essentially using religion to, oh, essentially ripping on religion to be, that's how you use a hand grenade. Essentially with the approval of God.
Ah. My God is better than your God.
I don't know what they're saying, but they're saying something.
My God wants me to win the war.
That's why he has a holy hand grenade.
That's right. That's great.
I wonder if the torch is an actual microphone.
It's a boom.
They lit the boom on fire.
It's a flaming boom.
Actually, this is pretty well lit there. This whole thing's been pretty well lit.
Yes, for what they had to work with, absolutely.
No, no fake skylights and
rooms. It's not high-key lighting, yeah. Especially in a period piece like this, you need to have shadows.
Yeah.
And they use it very well. Definitely, mm-hmm. They've used it very well. Ah. That's great. That gets you out of a jam. Go to animation.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. That creature appeared before.
He did.
He did.
Yeah. He was underneath a mountain or something.
That's right.
There's your answer on Gilliam.
Yeah, there's a table.
That's right.
And was that Taryn Gilliam?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was. And then you have the cops coming up and like they're following along. Mm-hmm. They knew how this was going to end. They knew they were going to have the cops come along. They had to have.
Well,
not
at
according
some
to the documentary.
Well, they must. They could have went back and post. Right, they could have back and right. post and done all the small little scenes of. Oh well, now let's do the scene of the guy getting his head cut off, and then you know the historian.
They could have.
And,
supposedly, well, I know. I know they could have.
Shack. They wrote in some other funny parts.
All I could tell you is what the actual men who filmed the movie said.
All right, I guess I'll have to watch this documentary then.
Almost the truth.
Almost.
Well, see, I'm highly suspect on all this structure stuff because either it's just. Telling how to tell a story is so ingrained that people don't do it consciously.
Or they do it unconsciously.
Yeah. So they actually do it unconsciously because after you watch 100 movies and they all follow the same, you know, structure within, you know what I mean? All the points are there, even though they're not by minute by any points and they're done different ways, but they're all there.
You just innately know what feels right.
Right. And so maybe they're just so great at storytelling they know how to tell a story.
I have no doubt about that. Yeah,
but
there's the guy again.
Yeah,
the hermit. Ooh, no red. Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah.
Right. Off we go.
All right. See you.
So this is where I would say the end of Act Two is. And the monster also is a big clue that it's the end of Act Two because that's the biggest thing they had to face, even though it was just animation.
Yeah. No, I would say that the rabbit scene actually was the beginning of Act Three. Sure. I get the feeling. Yeah.
That's the darkest.
Because that was dark. Yeah, end of Act Two, beginning of Act Three. So we're into Act Three already.
Well, see, I would say this is actually the darkest scene after he goes in, because we realize that.
I mean, the third act can still get very dark. That's not a problem.
Yeah. But see, this is the first time Arthur has to do something different.
That's my favorite line.
Yeah.
Oh, this does bring back high school so much.
Because usually Act 3 is denoted by the hero through all the tribulations of Act 2 has learned a new way to deal with life, and they have to deal that way, otherwise they will not achieve their goal.
Right.
Now, of course, this is all a ridiculous comedy. They still don't achieve their goal.
Right, and basically he just turned it on him, and he's learned his lesson, so now they can cross.
Right.
That's a pretty dangerous bridge. Look at that. And they're going beep, 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 beep. Oh, it's my favorite
intermission
music.
Comes at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. No psychedelic colors there. No.
That was it.
That was it.
We're back.
6 seconds.
I love the music. Very dramatic.
Which makes me wonder, was this written for the film or did they lift all that? I'd be interested to know.
I recall, they had a pretty extensive writing process.
That's great. He's been pulled over by the cops.
The fact that he keeps picking up that visor thing and he can see right through it is... driving me nuts too.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably the point.
Just like, ah!
Pretty extensive locations wherever they film some of these things. Geez. I don't know. Away from the city.
Northern England, somewhere. Ah, the lake. for all those familiar with Arthurian legend.
Yeah.
The Lady in the Lake gives Arthur the Excalibur. Whoa!
I know, and now then they get on some boat, which just comes out of...
Well, I mean, the whole thing with Arthurian legend, it's definitely based on Norse mythology, and that's where all this stuff comes from. If you see Excalibur, you see a lot of that Norse mythology come out.
It's a cool little boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, Lord of the Rings is, I mean, extensively based, I mean, it's all based on Norse mythology. And you see a lot of similarities in terms of the themes. Mm.
That would be the epic shot of the film right there, I think.
I guess so.
It's pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, I do believe that's a real castle, if I remember right.
Yeah, it looks like a real castle. That flag flying is...
I mean, I think I've seen pictures of that modern. It still exists.
It's a Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
All I can think
it's a Holiday Inn now.
All I can think is, how do you heat a place like that?
Yeah, you don't.
You're not thinking about that.
People back in those days.
A lot of space heaters. Fireplaces. Kniggets.
That mustache cracks me up.
Son of a window dresser.
It's great insults.
Yeah. I will unplug my nose.
I like how they kept the budget down. It's just him. I mean, they're just throwing stuff. They don't have to show anyone else.
Right. It's all implied.
Oh, well, there they are.
Those are the same guys from last time. They shot it all in the same day.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Like how they came.
You know, I think if I remember right, that's the same castle they used in Highlander.
Wow.
I wouldn't be surprised. It can be used again.
Could it?
But it's great how they took the boat over there and they walked away.
They just like stomped right across.
And the thing is, this just works because the whole movie has just been ridiculous all along.
Right,
it's
just like, it's
totally,
so now there's
totally fine that this army shows up out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, your suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
By this point, we accept any and everything.
Right.
Right.
We're on to them. We expect the unexpected now.
Yeah. If we didn't get the unexpected, we'd be disappointed.
Right.
And look at this detail. Well, I mean, actually, this is the one sequence where they spent as much time like this setting the stage. And, of course, it's their big money sequence. Lots of people. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
Except a lot of out of focus shots here.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It does. It looks just like Braveheart.
Uh-huh. Oh. That's a lot of people.
Gibson's a hack.
I love this.
Oh, no.
And boom.
And how they go hand. Ooh,
there's a
here.
Sound boom and the reflection of the police oh, nice. Vehicle.
Yeah, she's never seen him and she fingers him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right. Yeah, she's the wife.
They put a blanket over his head.
You're introducing logic into this.
Yeah. Take sushi.
I mean, this is just like Blazing Saddles. It's the same type of logic.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go.
And
that's it.
Oh, I think we have music at the end.
That's it?
I don't think so. I think that's really it.
Do we really? Is that really it?
Oh,
no. No, we do have the music at the end. That's right. It's the intermission music.
What do you say about Python except for it helps to be of a different state of mind a lot of times, but it's good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you got to know what you light want or getting, or, you know, you don't go out for Chinese food and expect to get a steak. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what do you think? What do you think?
Out of all of them, I mean, to me though, mm-hmm. no offense to the listeners out there, I think this one holds up the least out of all their films.
Out of the three of them?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, well, it's a lot more convoluted. All their other films, whether it be Life of Brian or The Meaning of Life and so on and so forth, they have definite story structure, definite place to go, a story to tell. Whereas this one's, as much as it's planned, it's probably not planned. It's just all over the place. It's kind of just convoluted and doesn't just... The jokes are there, but the jokes are more of, for me in this one, it's more of a nostalgia more than it is an actual, oh my God, now that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I just always liked Life of Brian because I guess I like religious humor.
Oh, you got plenty of religious humor in here, but there's more obviously in Life of Brian.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it started out with much more of a bang than from the midpoint on, mm-hmm. three quarters of the way on, I felt it sort of lost the steam it had of how impressive it was at the front for me.
I like it because it's just, I think it's brilliant, but sometimes, it's just nutty. The fact that you can have a woman, if she's made of wood and she's equal to a duck, then she's a witch. I mean, that's just like... I mean,
well, that's wonderful. It's a great brilliant. Comment on, you know...
The human mind.
Well, on the
winning an argument.
Well, it was a logic, and how do they play their absurd sense of humor? Which I mean, if you remember, they came from TV where they did their humor in short 3-4 minute bursts, and here they had to expand, and that they had done, and now for something completely different, which is basically where they strung a bunch of their skits together into a film. Mm-hmm. So here they actually had to construct a narrative, which I mean, to their to their credit, they strung along pretty well. I felt it started off stronger, and I remember nostalgically a lot of the little moments. I remember a lot of the phrases, lot of flashbacks from high school, but I felt it started sagging in the middle when I started mentioning when it got episodic. Mm-hmm. That's when it started sagging a bit because each, and that's why I was trying to look at it. Okay, what is this particular one doing? What so it started. The Galahad skit was actually a little funnier, and but the Robin one, that was fine. Okay, it's funny, but the gag kind of got stretched a little longer. I mean, they even made a fun of how long the gag was going. It's like, okay, we got to make this longer. And also it has to do with context and time. And when you see it in your life, and when you saw it, and the whole thing of slaughtering everyone, the gags were fine. It was a little long for me. I appreciated it. I have to see. I haven't seen the other ones in a while. I remember seeing Life of Brian. I thought Life of Brian was pretty good. My favorite part of Life of Brian is when the spaceship comes down. That's my favorite part. And then Meaning of Life, I like a lot of the different skits. And so I'd have to see them again. It's just more structured. I think the episodic nature of it, actually, I think it makes it a little harder, I hate to say, to watch because there's less to string it along as one complete narrative. And somehow, while they're all the funny, the Nice Hussein-y and with the Black Knight, all that kind of thing, it made it a little, I don't know. It technically was all great.
I think you have to take it in context as well, because what you're used to now, they weren't when this came out.
Absolutely.
Audiences.
Right. Yeah.
So what is impactful has lost its edge now, you know. So much of it doesn't date, and it's wonderful. But what was, oh, my God, back then is just taken for granted now because everyone knows the rhythms of Python, and everyone has become part of the ecology. What do you call
iconology?
It?
Iconology?
Yeah, whatever.
Culture. Okay. I don't
know. In our pop culture. But when this came out, can you imagine every scene, everyone's just at a loss as an audience.
Totally unexpected.
And when this came out.
You have to take that into account.
Just a reminder, when this came out, everyone saw it in the movie theater. There was no video. So you'd see it in the movie theater, and then you'd go back a couple of years later and see it. It's only when it came out. I don't even know when it came
and
out.
You should,
in the early 80s or mid 80s, that you could watch it again and again and again.
It's almost criminal to watch a comedy film devoid of the way it should be presented, which is in a theater full of people.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's so much, when you laugh and...
it's a whole different experience.
When you go see any film on opening weekend, it's a different experience than when you watch a DVD.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Blazing Saddles, I think. That changed for me. I enjoyed it much more when I was younger than when I was older. Mm-hmm. Wasn't as much, but maybe also it's the video experience that maybe it made it different. So maybe that makes a difference, seeing a big crowd.
I mean, when's the last time you went to a movie, a comedy, where you could barely hear the dialogue in the film because the audience is laughing that hard?
Right.
I think that's something that's horribly missing these days. Yeah. I remember seeing films, whether it's Tootsie, I can name you these films where you could barely hear the dialogue.
40-Year-Old Virgin, there was like two spots that I almost fell out of my seat. Mm. But you're right. I totally hear what you're saying, that it's not...
Well, I mean, from my great example of that is Casablanca. I saw Casablanca for its 50th anniversary showing, whatever, it was back in the 90s, and I saw it in a movie theater. That's a really funny film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a drama, but there is a lot of humor, and sitting in an audience with everyone, there was lots of points, there's a lot of jokes in there,
really?
A lot to laugh at. Absolutely, mm-hmm. It's a great experience to see Casablanca in a theater. And I think, maybe in the same way with this, I think with lots of people in an audience to watch it, I think you can...
It'd be a whole different,
experience. State of mind or not state of mind. I mean, just watching it, I think, can make a difference. So.
But they have a great body of work. These guys, I think wonderful to know that your friends and the people you work with, and you create things like this, and you have I would like to thank a blast while you're doing it. Mm-hmm. But just to leave a body of work like this, how wonderful!
I think they have a future.
Yeah.
I think they should.
I'll have to watch these guys. See.
Yeah, I think they should keep it up. Yeah, and should do some more work. So. Any other final words? And so, once again, we bid you adieu for another edition of Film Grok. This has been Serge Dalpierre,
John H. Ruby,
and Tim McMillan,
and Curtis Nelson.
See ya.